Welcome, Voltron fans. This is Mark Morrell, your host for Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast, and I'm here this week with Greg Tyler.
Hello, Mark Morrell. Hello, fellow Voltron fans. It's great to be here as always.
And it's another beautiful week in Voltron world, isn't it?
Every week is a beautiful week in Voltron world.
All right, so we just finished our complete recap in two episodes of New York Comic Con. Our first episode was an hour and 44 minutes long, and our second episode was 2 hours and 47 minutes long.
Holy moly. Yeah, those were long.
Yeah, that was our biggest ever podcast, and it was packed full of things. We had 20 interviews in that one podcast.
Yeah, that was amazing. You know, in addition to the folks who work on Voltron Legendary Defender, the show and the comic, we got to speak with so many fellow fans at the Voltron Collective and Kevin McKeever from Robotech and all that. It was so much fun.
And, you know, we had some of our friends there at New York Comic Con that we hung out with.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was Tally LaFlamme.
Yes.
So, Tally, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Greg.
Hello, hello.
Hi.
We want to welcome also a person who's never been on the podcast yet. This is the very first time, so I want to welcome Drew Merkel.
Hi.
How you doing, Drew?
Hey, Drew.
Hi, Drew.
This is exciting.
Well, it's exciting for us to have you here, so welcome.
Thank you.
So the last time we had Tally on was when Greg was on vacation.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Yeah, I missed the episode where we recap the series as a whole, right?
Yes. Yeah, you know, you missed that. Whatever, Greg.
Yeah, whatever.
Right. So I had Tara and Tally helping me with that one.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fun.
Oh, it was amazing. Thanks again, Mark. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and that was right after the show had just dropped on June 10th. So
yes.
We got to go over the whole thing, and that was wonderful.
It was.
And now we're at a point where we're reviewing those episodes, and today's episode we're actually going to be reviewing episode number 8, which is entitled Rebirth.
Right.
Yay.
So Drew and Tally are going to help us with that. In fact,
it's kind of like a radio drama, isn't it?
Ah, yes.
It's going to be like that. We're doing like basically our own table reading where some of us are taking some of the parts. So,
yes.
Before we start doing that, we'll, you know, divvy up the parts and we'll let everybody know who's playing which part.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we don't have books for folks, and we won't be saying, you'll know it's time to turn the page when you hear the lion roar like this.
So, I wanted to give Tally a chance to give her own rehash on New York Comic Con, because Greg and I have already given ours.
All right, let me tell you. You know, I've been to Comic-Con, I think, last 4 or 5 years. And this Comic-Con was definitely one for the record books. This year, the energy was just amazing. Speaking of, you know, Voltron energy, you know, quintessence, you might say.
Yes.
It was just amazing. I mean, to walk into a panel for Voltron on a Friday, not on a Sunday, on the main stage, and packed full of people was just amazing to see. Usually I feel like I'm the only person there in a Voltron cosplay at New York City Comic Con. However, this year I was not alone. In fact, far from it. I was probably way overshadowed. There were some amazing cosplays. It was just an incredible experience. It's like a Voltron Renaissance, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just amazing. To go to artist, you know, to go into Artist Alley and see the amazing art, to see the cosplay, to go to the panel was just phenomenal.
Did you tell everybody what you were cosplaying as at the panel?
Ah, yeah, I tried to take on the Allura. I did Allura.
Voltron Legendary Defender. Right?
Yes, yes. I wasn't the only one. It was amazing. It was just so much fun.
And one thing that I forgot to mention the last time, during the last two episodes that we just did, at the beginning of that panel, there's a guy that warms the crowd up, and his name is Mark Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Daniel is now a follower of Let's Voltron because
he did an amazing job. It was so much fun.
Yes, the day before, we had actually gone to the panel for Batman Return of the Caped Crusaders.
Oh my gosh, that movie is awesome. You guys have to watch it when it comes out November 1st.
I've got to see it. Love it.
I just got my copy and I love it because I get to review it before it comes out, you know?
Lucky.
Nice. So that was pretty cool. But we got there early enough that we were like the only ones there.
Right.
And we sat in our reserve seat section, and Mark Daniel came over to us and, you know, was just chatting us up and all that kind of stuff, finding out who we were and all that kind of thing. And I gave him one of the cards from Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast, and, you know, told him all about the podcast and that we were the hosts and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, I never expected that the next day at the Voltron panel, right at the beginning, he would start giving us a shout out.
Yeah, nice. He did, right?
Yeah, it caught me completely off guard. I didn't even know it had happened until after it was over.
Yeah, that was amazing.
So he asked if the people from Let's Voltron were here, so I had to stand up and you know, let them know we were there and everything, and we were basically sitting in the same seats we had been sitting in the day before. So that was really cool, because you're in a packed house at the main stage at New York Comic Con.
Yeah.
And they basically advertise your podcast. So that was a big thing. I mean,
yeah, I was excited for you, Mark. That was amazing.
Yeah.
It was fun.
It was.
So what did you think of the panel?
I thought it was great. You know, I had been to previous panels that any Voltron panel we ever had in the last 4 or 5 years. And, you know, they're great, you know, in their own ways. I've been to in St. Louis as well. The panel's there, but this panel was just, I mean, how do you describe it? It's almost like I guess it's kind of like, you know, wandering the desert, you know, the 40 years in exile to come to this, you know, where we have, you know, a DJ playing, excitement. I mean, you know, when you go to a panel, you know, previously, it's been just us old school fans, right? You know?
Right.
Us older people who grew up with it in 84 and 85 and their kids. But this year was like people who didn't know Voltron until now, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was just like, you know, I was waiting in line to that morning before to, you know, get into the queue to the panel, talking to a girl who was going to MIT, by the way. Oh my God, she was amazing.
Oh, cool.
You know, it was her, and she never seen Voltron until this last year. And here she was, an engineering student. I mean, an amazing girl, you know, college student, prior early 20s. And here she was to see a Voltron panel at New York City Comic Con. Oh, by the way, in a Keith Paladin armor cosplay.
Oh, that's cool.
Nice. Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
I was like totally girl crushing on her. She's like, oh my God, you're amazing. I mean, armor, not just, you know, I sew, but she had actual armor on. And I was just like, wow, you know. It was just an amazing experience.
Yeah.
I mean, some young people, when I see people who are younger than, I see young people like, you know, early 20s, late 20s, you know, who are into the show. It's like, wow, you know, this is catching that kind of generation that we kind of missed. You know, we're catching people, you know, that may have seen it, maybe grown up, maybe heard about it, but now who are into it on their own accord. And it's just amazing.
It's like going back in time to when Voltron the Third Dimension came out, and we found out that a large portion of the people that were watching Voltron the Third Dimension were actually college students.
Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we find out, you know, now that Voltron Legendary Defender has come out, there's a lot of college students again.
Yes.
College student age.
Mm-hmm.
If you've listened to the Voltron voice memes that we've had in our Voltron fan spotlight, you find that the ages of the people are pretty consistent, anywhere from like 17 to 25.
Yes.
So there's a big portion of the new fandom that are in that age range. And hey, welcome to the fandom.
Welcome. Yeah. We love you. Come on in.
We love you.
Absolutely. I think I've opined at least once on the podcast here that the fan reaction to this new series reminds me a lot of Star Trek The Next Generation back in 1987. The original series had its fandom from the 60s and into the 70s with the features and all that. But when Next Generation came out and was a huge mainstream pop culture hit, it brought in all these people who had never seen the original series. And this is sort of the same way now with Voltron Legendary Defender.
I think it's a good analogy. Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
So, Drew, you've been awfully quiet. How you doing over there?
I didn't get to go to New York Comic Con. I had to experience through
the party.
Through the eyes of the Let's Voltron podcast.
Now, I have to ask you, Drew, based on the fact that we were trying to bring New York Comic Con to the whole world. Did we do a good job?
I think you did a great job. It was like getting to be at the panel. And, you know, last time with the, was it SDCC, was the last time you did big coverage?
Yes.
See, I mean, a lot of that was like being there. I got to find that. I actually found that trailer from SDCC on the internet and got to watch the leaked trailer. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I have not been able to find the episode leaked anywhere. So that's a shame, because I that is one thing I really do feel like I missed out on. That, but you know, it's a long way to go to New York.
Yes,
from
yes,
yeah.
It is.
Oh no, it's not, Drew. I did it. Next week, come with me.
Okay. All right. We'll work that out.
Come with us. Yes.
It's just a hop, skip, and a jump from Alabama.
Yeah.
That's right.
Glad to hear. It's exciting to be here because I listen to you guys, you know, on my way to work multiple days during the week. So it's cool.
Well, we're glad to have you.
It took you a few days to listen to that last episode, didn't it?
Yes. In fact, I'm not completely through it. I've been using it as commuter, but I did hear all the panel and all the interviews on the way home today.
Oh, that's cool.
It takes me a trip to work, a trip back from work, and a trip to work again to cover that last episode that we just did, because it's an hour to work for me.
Wow.
Ooh, ow.
Ow.
Yep.
Yeah, I got about 30 minutes each way, so usually I can listen to your podcast on the way to work and back.
Okay.
Okay.
And,
with,
and a little change. You know, I have a little leftover, but usually that's about how it works out. And with all the podcasts I actually do listen to, it's kind of, you know, sometimes I've had to shuffle things out to make sure I got Let's Voltron, because I'm really into this new show.
Why would anybody be into this show? What's up with this show that everybody likes it?
It's that squint test.
Yes. You know,
they nailed the squint test and then added a new dimension.
Oh.
A third dimension.
Oh, maybe a third or fourth dimension?
Hmm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
They added all the bells and whistles that make us happy.
Oh, yeah. I'm a fan from the 80s. I had the Panache That's Place great. Lion set and the castle, and I had a Matchbox vehicle Voltron, and I was upset it didn't have action figures, too. So.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there are so many new toys coming out in January.
Wait.
And you know, as much as I'm excited for the combining lions, I was, you know, it being Playmates toys and the way they sculpt characters, mm-hmm. I was really, really hoping in that first wave they'd have some paladins.
I'm really
hoping that, you know, so I'll just have to make sure I buy the lions and make sure they see that I'm watching the show over and over and over. Mm-hmm. And then maybe they'll get to the second wave, which will have like paladins. Because, you know, Playmates, the way Playmates sculpts toys, a set of casual paladins and armor paladins would be awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm kind of a big Turtles fan, so when I heard Playmates was doing the toys, I was like, okay, yeah, that'll work.
I bought Star Trek figures that Playmates made by the hundreds. I can't count. I mean, they're most of them I have since sold over the years, but my gosh, I was addicted to those things. So yeah, I know the Playmates thing.
Yeah, I have Data and Geordi myself, so I know exactly how you feel about that.
So Drew, you are an old school Voltron fan. What was it like growing up with Voltron?
There was so much, because I'm still a really avid Transformers nut.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy about them. Got thousands of dollars worth of toys, both legit and like not quite as legit.
Third party,
high quality adult collectors that collectible items that aren't necessarily Transformers for real.
Right.
But, like King of Beasts.
Uh-huh.
Ah, yes. Oh, yeah. We don't mention that here. Yeah. Just kidding.
So was it the collecting that got you really, you know, over it? Or was it the actual show itself?
Oh, I loved all those shows in the 80s. You know, Voltron was amazing and Transformers was amazing.
Right.
And Voltron, feel real fortunate right now because Voltron's got to come back in a way that only Transformers has.
Right.
Yeah.
From the 80s. There were a lot of little things that got lost. You know, I loved Star Blazers and Transor Z, what's called Gatchaman now that I knew was G-Force.
I loved them too, G-Force.
Battle of the Planets.
Yeah, well, see, that was two different things too.
Yeah.
But no, all the great voice actors have been a big inspiration to me. You know, anything with Casey Kasem or Michael Bell in it, I pretty much turned out over.
Yes.
So yeah, I mean, I'm even done some things on the YouTube myself. So I'm out there voice acting on, you know, stop motions and things like that.
That's great.
So what have you done?
There's a series called Transformers Universe that I play a lot of characters in. It's from a guy named Matt from the UK.
Oh, cool.
Who does that. The big thing I'm in right now is a Marvel Avengers where I play Captain America, and it's by a fella named that goes by Swagwave on YouTube. And it's it gets a lot of hits every time one of those episodes come out. It's probably some of those videos have 500,000 or more hits.
Yeah.
Holy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holy.
Wow. It's just, it's a hobby. It's something I do for fun when I can. And, you know, I used to do more of it, and I just don't have quite as much time now. I have to be, I'm to the point where I have to be picky about which projects I take. So,
oh, wow.
I think it's good. So just to add on to that, the Audio Nights Theater is a group that I have a couple, I've been on some podcasts with, and we're currently doing an action figure podcast. And the one that's about to come out, I'll make sure you get a link to it because we did homage the Voltron transformation sequence for our intro.
Oh,
nice.
Because we were discussing the toys.
Very cool.
So,
nice.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm a fan, a huge fan of our friend Michael French and Melinda Mock's Retro Blasting YouTube channel. I think that the action figure that podcast sounds like it'd be in a similar vein. So very cool. Looking forward to getting a link to that.
I'll make sure it happens.
Thanks.
Yeah.
All right. So Tally and Drew, have you guys sent us your email with your thoughts about what you're looking forward to in season 2 of Voltron Legendary Defender?
No, I haven't yet, but I definitely will. Although I've had a little, hope my opinion isn't spoiled by what I saw at Comic-Con. So I'll
yeah, some of us don't have that problem.
Well, see, I was telling my boys today about who was a certain voice actor in the episode I saw while I was at Comic-Con. They were all very, very excited about it. I can't say probably who that person was because they weren't.
Are you talking about Weird Al Yankovic?
Yes, Weird Al.
We've already said that.
We have. Okay, well, good, good. Because we're huge, 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 huge fans of Arnett Hall. He is like our household, you know, tea here around here. So they're like totally floored.
Oh, yeah. Even Lauren Montgomery was saying that when they had Weird Al in the studio and everything, they had to get pictures with him because they needed to geek out with him because he was one of their childhood idols.
It's mine. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah, you know, Voltron has gotten somewhere when Weird Al's on the show. That's so cool.
Yes. Amazing. Or Daryl.
Yeah.
He's the lead character in a current Disney show on Disney XD called Milo Murphy's Law.
Yeah, that's right.
So he's getting a lot of work right now.
Awesome.
He's amazing.
So the reason I ask about the whether you've sent your emails into us or not, because we're still accepting emails. We're letting this contest go on longer because we do realize that it takes people a while to get through our podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Especially since the New York Comic Cons were so long. Yeah. So we're going to extend it a few weeks, and we want to get all your emails, you know, because these are something that we're actually sharing with people on the podcast. We shared a couple in the last episode, and now I'd like to share a couple more with you. Is that okay?
Let's do it.
Absolutely.
Let's do it. Let's hear it.
I wonder if mine's in your pile.
We got an email from Chris White. He says, I'm looking forward to a lot of things. Keith's backstory and whether he's part Galra. More of Shiro's backstory and family. More about the Galra themselves outside of just out to conquer the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
More about Matt, Pidge's brother, both what happened to him and what he's actually like. We saw her dad a bit more in the first season, but not really Matt that much.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And finding out whether Pidge's mom knew she had infiltrated the garrison. And then finding more about the Alteans and Altea, finding out about Allura's mother and how King Alfor died.
Now that would be interesting.
Maybe some more depth in Karan. Did he go into a pod willingly to take care of Allura? And lots more, really, including finding out what's going on with all these
teaser scenes. So that was Chris's email.
Yeah, all the above, definitely. Well,
he went all in on that email.
Yeah, thanks for the email.
Yes.
Nice, detailed email.
You want to talk about a detailed email? Okay.
All right, let's hear it.
Here it comes.
All right, we have Lucy Nguyen.
N-G-U-Y-E-N?
Yes.
If we mispronounced your name, Lucy, we apologize.
Yeah, I apologize. Yeah. It just says, hi, Mark and Greg. First of all, thank you so much for hosting Let's Voltron. I absolutely love listening to it. It's great hearing so much about Legendary Defender, of which I'm a huge fan, and Voltron in general. You've gotten me very interested in the original 80s series, and though I sadly haven't had time to watch it yet, I definitely will as soon as I can.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And we've heard that from a lot of people. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you sharing your passion with other Voltron fans, especially with the New York Comic Con recaps. I was pretty upset about not being able to go, but being updated through Twitter and now through the podcast helps make up for it.
That's nice. Thank you.
Great.
As for the contest question, I hope it's okay if I provide a somewhat lengthy answer because there's so much I'm looking forward to in the next season. First, I'm looking forward to Keith's backstory.
I see a pattern.
Yes. During the NYCC panel, they mentioned that this would be touched on in season 2, and I'm beyond excited to learn more about one of my favorite characters' origins.
Mm-hmm.
Keith is a very mysterious character by nature, and the combination of this, his alien origins in the original series, his status as an orphan in Legendary Defender, and the popular fan theories, which I personally love, that he is part Galra, Altaian, or both, makes me think that he had a very interesting story that needs to be told.
Yeah.
Also, I'm extremely curious to see how he and Shiro know each other and how far back their connection goes. That's one of the most intriguing dynamics that I saw in season 1.
Yeah.
And it has so much potential, but it was barely touched on. Yeah, you guys agree with that, right?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, they do seem to have the respect for Shiro, if he was a commonly respected person in the Academy, or was it just between him and Keith? I don't know, but definitely seems like things to be explored, you know?
Yeah, I do want to make a very quick nitpicker comment. And there was a comment that Keith was part alien in the original series. There's actually nothing in the original series to suggest that, as far as I can recall.
That's true.
But in Voltron Force.
Yeah,
in Voltron Force, it was suggested that he has some Arusian ancestry. So yes. He does seem to have some alien blood in him in Voltron Force.
Yes, Voltron Force.
I got to wonder if Galran and an Arusian hybrid has happened before, and if that's called a Galtean or something.
Galtean, nice.
Galtean.
Nice.
They're both very mystical races. They have both a magical connection. Who knows?
Well, it's kind of... pointed out that Althor and Zarkon knew each other.
Absolutely.
And with him having been the Black Paladin.
Yes.
I would wager that at one point they were friends. And if these races were friends at one point, there may be many Galteans.
That's a good point.
Hey, here you go.
That's some fan fiction material. I just copyrighted that. Nobody touched it.
Writers.
Nice.
Okay. Well, Lucy continues.
Yes.
I'm also excited to see character development. Lance's growth and development of leadership skills has been brought up multiple times in panels and interviews, and I want to see how one of my other favorite characters is able to progress. Going back to Keith again, I want to see how he copes with leading Team Voltron and the development he goes through that makes him Shiro's first choice for the new Black Paladin. Assuming he does actually end up becoming leader, of course, I'm still a little apprehensive and nervous about Shiro's ominous comment in the beginning of the season 2 trailer.
Join the club.
Aside from individual character development, I'd like to see how relationships between characters develop as well. Certain characters haven't interacted as much with each other, and there are dynamics that have already been established that I love seeing. So really, anything with Team Voltron becoming closer would be fantastic. In particular, I find Keith and Lance's relationship and Lance and Hunk's relationship very entertaining and would like to see more of them.
Yeah.
I would also like to see Keith and Shiro developed more, as mentioned before, as well as Keith and Pidge, who I think have the potential to get along very well as friends.
Yeah.
Third, I'm interested in seeing more about the Galra and Altea before the war, as well as the original Paladins and the origins of Voltron. I want to see more of their culture, and also why they entered the war in the first place.
I think we will definitely see much more about the Galra in upcoming episodes. Altea, I don't know. I mean, this is all just speculation, but I think we need to know what makes Zarkon tick. So I think we're going to learn quite a bit about the Galra at some point.
I guarantee you it will not happen in episode 2 of
season 2. No, it will not.
Spoilers!
It's kind of an anti-spoiler, but sure.
Yeah. Just having been a fan of the Airbender series and the, you know, given the history of the current, you know, producers, I can definitely see us seeing more backstory, which is so wonderful. I mean, we love the original story. We do. We love it in its own merits. But how much, well, I'm not talking about, you know, Golion. I'm talking about, you know, Voltron as we saw it in the United States. We didn't have much backstory. Here it was as what it was. There was no backstory. But I think with these producers, and their style with the Korra and everything, we're going to see a wonderful way of presenting the backstory. It may not be, you know, it's going to be here and there, but it's going to be done very well. I trust them very implicitly. I trust them. I've seen their work. I know what they can do. And I believe, of course, we all seen the first season, and we know what they can do in the first season. Mm-hmm. To show us a backstory. There's not going to be superficial, here we go. It's going to be, we're going to see some depth, these characters, and depth in their story we haven't seen before in Voltron. I'm very excited. That very excited.
I like how you said you implicitly trust them.
I do.
That's an important thing, that if you're a fan of a show and everything, and I've seen this in other shows, right, like the show Lost, mm-hmm, or other types of shows like that,
right,
where they go in completely wild and different directions.
Sure.
And people lose trust in the people that are making the show.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we don't have that with this, with Joaquin and Lauren and Tim and all the people that are involved in the making of Voltron Legendary Defender. From what we've seen, from what they've done in Avatar and The Legend of Korra and everything,
right,
we just know now that they've opened, you know, because they've already said this in each of those two shows, they were kind of held back on how much serialization they could do, mm-hmm, because the networks didn't want to do that much. They wanted to have more compartmentalized episodes and stuff like that. But in this one, they can, mm-hmm, you know, they can start things on a tangent in one direction and then come back to that later and then keep on developing that over time. And it's just something that, mm-hmm, it sort of just weaves into the whole tapestry of the whole environment that we're living through.
It's a very mature style of storytelling. It's not, you know, a pedantic or a childlike, here's your hero, here's your bad guy in the story. This is a very intricate, very deliberate, highly artistic way of telling a story, which I love. It's amazing.
I think it's great how they walk the fine line between, you know, it's family friendly. I mean, the mm-hmm, villains are creepy, but you don't explicitly see the horrible things that they probably did, you know, and do to people, which makes it, you know, makes them more black hat villains in that sense. But at the same time, these characters, all of them, the heroes and presumably the villains, as we learn more about them, there's a lot more to them. I mean, the writers are not writing down in anticipation of children watching the show. This is good stuff. There's a lot of meat in the show that adults and teenagers and adolescents can also enjoy.
Well, I know Greg's looking forward to it spinning off into like Vehicle Voltron, but I'd be okay with an original Paladin spinoff. I think that'd be kind of awesome.
Yeah, when I say Vehicle Voltron, hey, I love the thing, but I just don't. I agree wholeheartedly that at this point in the narrative, it makes no sense to bring that in there at all. So let's leave that one alone for a while.
Well, you heard Tim in one of my interviews with him at San Diego. He said we could do a spinoff called Voltron Knights.
There you go. Yeah. Maybe they could have Hasselhoff do a voice in that show. That'd be great.
That'd be amazing.
That would be funny, but I'd rather have him do it as Michael Knight.
Oh, heck yeah. I'm a huge Knight Rider fan.
Agree.
All right, so continuing with Lucy's email here.
Oh, sorry, Lucy. We got a little off track there.
Yeah.
That's okay. Overall, I think the biggest thing I'm interested in seeing is answers to big questions and context behind scenes in the season 2 trailer. How does the team end up finding each other after being split up? Why is Shiro, and apparently also Keith, in danger in the beginning of the season? The panel mentioned they're in big trouble. What could that mean? A lot of people are theorizing that Shiro will die, which I disagree with, but what specifically will he face? Who is the mysterious Galra who helped the team escape from Zarkon at the end of season 1 and was shown again in the trailer? Who is the hooded figure with the knife in front of Allura in the trailer? Honestly, I think the trailer could be causing me more pain than happiness at this point with all these unanswered questions. So she says a little bit more about cosplay, but then she says, I hope you both are doing well, and I'm looking forward to future podcasts and your thoughts on the new season, and thanks for hosting this contest too. Sincerely, Lucy, an extremely dedicated and excited Voltron fan.
Thank you, Lucy. Nice.
Thank you, Lucy and Chris, for your wonderful emails, and of course, they're both entered in the contest.
I'd like to throw something in there, too. She was talking about all these story points revealed in the trailer and the trailing episodes of season 1. There's one thing that I've not touched on in this podcast that maybe I'm reading too much between the lines, but you know, Shiro, when he was facing off against Hagar in the season 1 finale, there's a point where we see an image that looks like an evil version of Shiro. Was she just playing with his mind, or is it possible that the Shiro that we see escaping the Galra ship isn't Shiro? What do you think, guys?
So what you're saying is his robot arm is the only real part of him. The rest of it is an android.
Oh, I have no idea.
Given the powers that she has and tell what she could do, you know.
Yeah.
So where did you hear this theory, Greg?
I didn't hear it. I just thought of it.
This was your theory.
This is from the mind of Greg.
Yes. Yeah, I really don't follow a lot of I follow, you know, the tweets that show up on my feed and all that, but I don't actively go out and wonder what a lot of people are chatting about. Maybe I should, but this whole Shiro not Shiro thing is something that popped in my own head.
Or what if that is Shiro being all evil again? I mean, you don't stay there a year and fight in the pits and not, you know, have some issues because of it.
Exactly. Right.
We still don't know what turned his hair white.
Right. Well, right.
PTSD. Stress.
Yeah.
Remember that the creators of this show, the showrunners, embrace all theories.
I don't think they'd have to swap him out for that. I think maybe the contact could trigger something inside of him. I thought from the beginning of the season, you know, beginning of the series, that, oh, what if he's a sleeper agent and all it's going to take is the trigger?
Oh, you know, good point.
They got to get him in there and get him in position and get things rolling, and then just all of a sudden they can recall on him or whatever and say, oh, well, we've got our Shiro back. But the line later with Hagar where she says, you could have been my greatest weapon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That kind of made me wonder if that was just all in left field. So,
yeah, I mean, Shiro might just be fine and dandy at the end of the season and going into season 2, you know, with whatever this new threat is that might be suggested by the trailer, or the teaser. But I don't know. It was just something that's floating around in my head.
I just don't want to ever see a whole round of clones of Hagar surrounding Shiro again.
No.
Never again.
No.
So for fans who have just come aboard with Voltron Legendary Defender, I think we touched on this point before, but in Beast King Go Lion, the anime that inspired the 80s Voltron and an 80s Voltron itself, Sven, who's the character that's called Shiro in the new series, he had a significant battle against Hagar and was, in Voltron, severely injured in that battle. In Beast King Go Lion, the character who was called Shirogane actually died as a result of injuries that he sustained in that fight. So when we saw in Voltron Legendary Defender Shiro surrounded by these duplicates of Hagar, we all started wondering if his days were numbered.
It's funny how that worked in the 80s, because just 2 years later, you know, they kill Optimus Prime in a movie theater. But, you know, for Voltron, they had to send him to space hospital forever.
Right.
Because nobody ever dies.
So what's next on the hit parade, Mark?
So I just wanted to say to everybody, Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween to you too.
This is our Halloween episode, so I gotta ask you guys, what are you wearing?
I have pajama pants and a Let's Voltron podcast t-shirt on. Oh, you mean for Halloween?
Yes. What are you wearing for Halloween?
Oh, well, that remains to be seen. I don't know yet. How about the rest of you?
Probably a mechanic's uniform.
Nice.
Oh, that's every day. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
I'm going as 11 from Stranger Things. Y'all seen that movie? Oh. Stranger Things yet?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Gosh, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. Love it.
Yeah. And how about you, Andy's kids in here?
Oh, I'm wearing an Armani suit.
Oh, nice.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm probably just going to wear my Voltron jersey.
Yeah. I'm still amazed by how much positive reaction you got to that jersey at New York Comic Con. It was really
something. Yes. Yeah. Mine too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. I just had a memory.
Stop me.
You remembered something, Drew?
Yeah. Do you remember? Did anybody have the Voltron costume in the 80s?
With the plastic?
No.
I had the plastic red helmet that was a key helmet. One.
Yeah.
And the Voltron head wrapped around it and tapped into the sides of it.
Yep.
So you could be Keith or you could be Voltron.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I never had that set, and I never had the Ben Cooper Halloween costume either. But as an adult, I found a vintage Ben Cooper 80s costume, and it's part of my collection now. And I am actively seeking that other dress-up set that you just mentioned. So,
cool.
And a few years ago, they had the Rubies Voltron costume.
Yeah.
Scott Knightlick wore it at one of the panels.
Oh, wow. Yeah. He's a brave soul.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is that one of the skimpy costumes?
No, it was one piece coverall kind of deal.
Yeah.
Oh,
right.
Easy.
Right.
With okay.
You know, not the most authentic looking thing, but I have noticed that some Voltron fans have actually used that costume as the basis basically the bottom layer for a pretty well-developed overall custom made costume. So it actually has been used in, to greater effect than the costume out of the box would do.
Did you guys make your Voltron pumpkins?
Oh,
I did
man.
Not.
You know, they had sent out the Voltron stencils, you know?
Those are very cool. I usually go freehand.
I don't usually carve. I paint. I get lazy.
Oh, do you?
I painted an Allura. Did you guys see the one I sent out?
No, haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, I did that weekend ago, and it didn't turn out the way I had planned.
No way. Michelangelo, what?
When it comes to like watercolors and those types of paints, I'm not really good with them, and especially on a pumpkin.
Yeah.
A Sharpie.
I prefer coloring with colored pencils on paper.
Gotcha. Mm. To that end, you can, of course, download coloring pages, right?
Yes.
Yes, that's true.
Yes, those are available.
For Voltron Legendary Defender and Voltron Force.
Yes.
Sweet.
I was also wondering if at any point we might be able to make Voltron-shaped candy.
Hmm.
Put a little food coloring in that, and you can make all the different lions.
Nice. Fruit snacks are probably going to be something they do.
Gummy lions?
Yes.
Right.
I can see it.
So I'm thinking, you know, we might get some molds that we can put, like, white chocolate or, you know, milk chocolate in, and then they have the shape of Voltron's head or the shape of the lion heads or stuff like that.
Mm.
That would be cool.
Ah, nice.
Jell-O? What Jell-O?
Wow, Jell-O that'd be pretty neat. Mm-hmm.
And then I was just thinking about Voltron recipes that you might have at Halloween.
Uh-huh.
So I've got a list here. Tell me which one you think is good. I have the Ghost of Alfor cookies.
Yeah, pretty good, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Low fat.
Voltron blade brownies.
I keep thinking razor blade.
Balmeric crystal cakes.
Nice.
Hey, there you go.
Oh, it could be like rock salt candy.
Arusian ale.
Arusian ale. Wow. Nice.
Allura's apple cider.
Huh.
Paladin punch.
Well, that's what we don't want to happen. We don't want the paladins to get punched.
True.
Galra green goo.
Of course.
And Hagar's druid soup.
Wow. Nice.
Hmm.
So which of those would be the most appealing to you at Halloween time?
I think the crystal cake.
With the Balmeric crystal cakes, it's like brown cupcakes with the crystals jutting out of the top of them.
Ah, very cool. I would say, given the popularity of Keith at New York Comic Con, Keith Cream Puffs might be popular.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Keith Cream Puffs, okay. There would be some fans out there who don't think that Keith is a cream puff. They think he's a little tougher than that.
Okay, all right.
We had heard from Tim Hedrick during the panel at New York Comic Con that you know, Hunk is very much going to show us some more of his culinary skills.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, and that means you could look out for the Voltron recipe book. So I was just thinking of some Halloween-specific recipes that could be part of that book.
Those are pretty cool.
So now we're all set for next Halloween, right?
Yep. There we go.
And we're going to get better at our costumes for next Halloween as well, right?
Yes. Yeah. I have failed you, Voltron fans.
All right. So happy Halloween, everybody. And people who are on other parts of the planet, happy October 31st.
Yep.
All right. Now it comes to this part of the podcast where I need to talk about something that happened with the Voltron fandom this past week.
Okay.
Something that was not pleasant and certainly was not indicative of the Voltron fandom I have known.
Yes, same here.
So, here we go. In the past, the worst fights amongst fans were to say which Voltron was better, Lion Force Voltron or Vehicle Team Voltron. A select few are still fighting that fight. And you know who they are, Greg,
yeah,
right?
Yes, we do.
Greg.
And now, Voltron has this new, wonderful reimagining provided by the best production team at DreamWorks and Studio Mir that any fandom would be lucky to have. But since the dawn of Voltron Legendary Defender, a new fight has emerged, and it has to do with shipping and the Ages of the Paladins. When this show first came out, people fell in love with these characters, whereas every character was seeing equal love across the board. People started to pick their favorite ships and share those with the fandom, explaining why those ships were their favorites. People began creating fan art and fan fiction and cosplay based on these ships, and sharing them on social media like Tumblr. Then people started thinking that other people's ships were wrong, specifically based on the ages of the characters.
As fans understood them to be.
Yes. Even though the explanation had come from the creators of the show that the Paladins are teenagers, this wasn't enough for many people caught up in the fight. They had to know the exact age of each character to prove that someone else's ship was wrong, in poor taste, and inappropriate. People would send hateful messages over social media, harass people constantly, and some even sent death threats. Most of the fandom of Voltron would not have even known this was going on because they're not involved in shipping or fan art or fan fiction and cosplay. They just love the show and the merchandise that comes with it. However, it has come to the point where all this hateful behavior has made people so obsessed with the ages of the characters that they demanded the writers and creators of the show tell them their exact ages. So the head writer for Voltron Legendary Defender, Tim Hedrick, wrote a tweet on October 26th to put this all to rest. He said, "Final statement. You have been told the Paladins' ages. Your imaginations are your own business. Thanks for watching. Please be kind." So, in response to that, I have to say, hate is a horrible thing. It leads people into dark places and a lot of distress and suffering. So much so, people go through depression, anxiety, and suicidal thoughts. Those people who project hate need to step back, take a look at themselves, determine what kind of person you want to be, and then understand we're all different in our own way, and then learn to accept people for who they are. On this podcast, we wholeheartedly accept everyone in the Voltron fandom, no matter what.
Absolutely.
But one thing that has to stop is fighting amongst ourselves and spreading hate. We as Voltron fans cannot be a part of that. And we must not harass those people who are producing the very thing we love.
Exactly.
We must come together, like Voltron, as one fandom committed to accept everyone despite any differences and share in this wonderful thing called Voltron.
Agreed.
Agree. Wholeheartedly.
I want to add to that, that at New York Comic Con, the major reason why this was the best convention experience of my life is that I got to interact one-on-one with so many fellow fans of all ages and backgrounds. It was very cool to have that coming together like Voltron feeling. And there is no time, there is no place where harassment or hate is acceptable in this or any fandom. We are all in this because we have a common interest in Voltron, old and new, or, you know, any of the above. You know, when we start talking about the impacts that harassment, death threats, and these horrible things have on people, I think people need to look inside themselves and just think, what would it be like if you were the target of that sort of harassment and hatred? I think we've all been in dark places at various points in our life, and we certainly do not need to be driven to those dark places in pursuing something that we love, Voltron. So let's all be united at the risk of perpetuating the cliches. Let's all come together like Voltron. We are all friends in this common interest. Let's all act like it. Thank you.
The thing is, Greg, I've been on the other side of that. I have been at the 180 side of where we've had to, well, let me say this. In social media, you know, I'm involved with a group of fans, you know, Star Trek Force, you know, and it's been like, we had some people against us, and it's like, it's just, it's ridiculous because we're all fans of Voltron. It doesn't really matter what our particular nuance is. We're all fans of Voltron, and it seemed like there for a while online, it was like we had this animosity going for, I don't even know why. It was just, I mean, we're all fans of the same thing. You know, that's the important thing. We're in a fandom together, and we should support each other in our fandom, you know? We really shouldn't be so...
We should lift each other up.
We really should. Yeah. Absolutely, Mark. Yeah. Absolutely.
And I want to point. I want to point out very quick, Drew. Before I want to hear your thoughts, but I want to say very quickly, what we just commented on is a very vocal but very small minority of Voltron fans. The vast majority of fans have been wonderful, and those are the people that I am so grateful to count myself among, you know. The severity of the actions of some folks is high, but this is a very small but vocal minority. So let's all keep that in context. Now, Drew, what were your thoughts?
It typically is a very small, very vocal minority. I've been in other fandoms that have experienced a huge population growth because of a new, Transformers movies is a good example. As the fandom grows, it doesn't just grow with the kind, happy people. You know, the more people that get injected into a scenario, the more different types of people you're going to have. And there's always going to be that as something grows. So I take it as a sign that, you know, Voltron has reached a level that it hasn't been at in quite a long time. That said, spreading hate is not good.
And I'd like to add one more thing very quickly. If you are active online with fellow Voltron fans and you see that there are people who are getting harassed and, you know, getting these things, please reach out to those people and offer your support, because you never know what impact those horrific actions online may have on people. We're all friends who have things in common, and let's act like the friends that we are.
Yep.
And let's start with the example set by the showrunners and by the writers, and embrace all theories, embrace all interpretations, and just say, that's fine. This show creates so much, you know, creativity out of people.
Mm-hmm.
People are doing fan fiction, they're doing fan art, they're doing cosplay, they're, you know, coming up with all kinds of theories about everything about these characters. Sure. And you've seen just some of them in these emails that we've gotten for this contest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So everything is okay.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's never okay to say somebody else's ideas or interpretations or opinions are wrong.
And if you don't like something, you don't have to look at it.
Absolutely. That's true.
It's as simple as that. If you disagree with something you're seeing, you don't have to participate.
Absolutely. Exactly.
It's as simple as that. We've got this. If we've got this great show, we don't want to see it tarnished by hateful people.
Right.
And we have a great fandom too.
Yes.
Right. Back in 1984, we had no other people around us to, you know, relate to. I was by myself. I thought I was the only girl like Voltron, honestly, back in 1984. And now it's like, wait a minute, I'm not alone. I'm like, it's about time I feel a part of something. Let's not spoil it for each other. Let's, you know, finally, say, we have our little world together. We can, you know, geek out together and embrace it. I mean, certain nuances aren't for you. That's fine. But you know what? It's like, finally, that little girl back in Oklahoma, 1984, has a place to belong, finally.
So there you go. That's right.
You know?
Everyone listening to this podcast, everyone who has enjoyed any incarnation of Voltron is welcome and part of a enormous and positive community. I'm so pleased and proud to call myself a Voltron fan.
Absolutely.
Here, here.
And I'm proud to be here with other Voltron fans like you guys.
Thank you, Mark. The feeling's mutual. Mark. Seriously.
Agree.
So
love.
So just let's spread the love. Let's come together like Voltron and let's bring together the love.
Spread love.
Let's go, Voltron fans.
Let's go, Voltron fans! This is your Voltron Fan Spotlight.
Hi there, this is the Voltron voice meme. I picked this up off of my friend Nat, Jadebot's page, and thought it might be fun. So I'm gonna go ahead and use her little prompt that she wrote herself, because recycling's fun. Alright, so name and URL. My name is Suzanne, or Susie, but most of my friends call me Subi with a B because they like to be annoying. And my URL on Twitter is Munchausen Cos. It's short for Munchausen Cosplay, of course. A little bit about myself is I'm 23. I work at a Marriott hotel, the Residence Inn. At the front desk, but do a lot of other stuff. I like to write in my spare time. I pursue pretty much anything artistic, like drawing and photography and sewing and cosplay, of course. I've been cosplaying for, we're getting somewhere in between 8 to 10 years. I sort of started losing count. I live in Ohio, and I live in a house with a roommate and 3 cats who are absolute terrors, but we love them. I have an extensive Jabba the Hutt collection, which is kind of weird. How did I get into Voltron? Okay, that would be Natalie and crew. I joined Twitter not long ago at all, and it's pretty much everything everybody posted. So being that I work at a front desk at a hotel, I have a lot of downtime, and they usually don't care if I do some, you know, if I put on Netflix as long as I'm paying attention. So I picked up Voltron because it was easy for me to watch while I was sitting at the front desk, and, well, here we are now. Loved it. It was really good. So I picked it up because those idiots never shut up about it. Had you ever seen any of the earlier shows before watching Legendary Defender? Theoretically, the answer to that is yes. I did pick up a couple episodes of Voltron here and there, as I used to watch Adult Swim frequently. So I know they ran Voltron for a brief period of time. Not sure which Voltron it was and what episodes exactly I caught, but I've always known about Voltron. It's always been there. It's pretty important to a lot of cartoon and anime roots and all of that. So I'm sure along the way I've seen some of it. I don't have a vivid memory of watching it, but I know it was there at some point. Favorite character? That is a 3-way tie, very easily. First mention would be Hunk. I'm probably most like Hunk, so I like him the best. I've always identified with bigger characters, and he's, you know, goofy and good-hearted and likes food, but is also really, really smart. I mean, he's the engineer. I mince terms a lot, but, you know, he fixes the ship. That takes a lot of brains, and, you know, that's awesome. I also love Pidge. I identify with Pidge as well. I mean, his circumstances are definitely different, or her circumstances, depending on how you look at it, are definitely different, but I've always dressed, up until recently, more masculine and sort of didn't care about my gender so much. But also, Pidge is extremely smart, and I like that they're constantly fed up with everybody's crap. It's lovely. But then my third favorite is definitely Corinne. I love him, adore him. He's the best. His mustache is fantastic, and he gets passed over a bit, but love Corinne. What are your ships, if any? I am not really a big shippy person. I don't really get into the shipping. I normally, when I ship in a series, it's usually typically the whatever is canon. So not really big into the ships. I'm generally okay with all of the Voltron ships. I like the fan art that I see, and the fan content's really interesting. There's not one that I'm particularly like, oh yeah, I definitely ship that. But I generally enjoy most of the fan content from a lot of the ships. Some of them are a little weird, but, I mean, that goes to say with every fandom. What are you hoping to see in future seasons? Well, I want to see more of what goes on with Pidge and Hunk, of course. Like, I feel like we don't know too much about Hunk. He got all of his great stuff with the Belmarans and all that, but I want to see more Hunk, personally. I'm interested, actually, a lot in Lance. I want to know what his motives are, like where he comes from and why. There's got to be something funny. Goofy characters like that are never just goofy characters because they're goofy. There's always something in there. I want to know more about Corran. I really do. I'm just generally excited to see where the Voltron Adventures are going to take these characters. Favorite episode? Because of the nature of which I watch these episodes, I don't remember specifically where the episode breaks were and all that, but I really enjoyed the scene a lot where they go to get the other lions. I don't know why I particularly have vivid memories of seeing Pidge discovering his lion. I also really like... Yeah, I probably like the Haunted Castle one. I don't know who doesn't like that one. And I don't know, just any... I generally enjoyed most of the episodes, so it's hard for me to pick one. Which lion would I pilot? Definitely the yellow lion. I'm not the most leadership-based kind of person, but I do have tendencies to be kind of dad-like to my friends. I say dad-like because I never say mom, because I always consider mom friends to be slightly more responsible, whereas I'm just drunk and like to protect my friends. But so I do have that protective quality towards my friends, but I also am I'm pretty laid back and chill, but I'm in the way that I'm protective. That's kind of how I like what I like about Hunk's type is he's the big kind of bashes into things, kind of a tankier person, and that's sort of my thing. I mean, otherwise, I'd say secondly, I might be the Green Lion, or the Red Lion, actually. I can see myself as either of those, because, you know, I love green. Ask anybody. I don't necessarily love it, but, you know, green follows me. But Red Lion, I can be angry and very unstable, so it actually might make sense for me to be the Red Lion as well. But if I had to pick one, I'd definitely say the yellow lion. And then I suppose I'm supposed to say these names. So, Shiro, Keith, Lance, Pidge, Hunk, Allura, Corran, Zarkon, Kerberos, Galra. I mince this one a lot. So, Eris, Altea, Belmera, and Quintessence. All right, so that's the Voltron voice meme. I did it. That's a thing.
Now we've come to the part where we actually get to review an episode of these wonderful episodes that DreamWorks brought us. So we're doing episode 8, Rebirth. Does everybody have their script?
We yes. do indeed.
Uh-huh. Okay. Just as a refresher here, Drew, who did we assign you?
Pidge, Keith, and Rax.
Okay. Pidge, Keith, and Rax will be Drew. And then Tally, who did we give you?
All the girls.
Except Pidge.
Oh, okay. So you're Allura, the Balmera grandmother, and Shay.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And then I'm going to be Shiro, Hunk, and the narrator.
Okay.
And Greg, you're going to be...
Lance and Karan.
Lance and Karan. Okay.
I love Karan.
Me too, awesome.
So let's get started.
All right.
Episode 8, Rebirth. And now, as you recall, the previous episode, Return to the Balmera, it ended with Voltron seemingly won the day, but then the ship crash-landed, and we kind of knew which ship it was. It looked like a coffin, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't look as much like a coffin as they did in the 80s, but I guess that's okay.
Right. These are the newfangled coffins.
Newfangled coffin.
All right, so this episode was directed by Chris Palmer. Mm-hmm. And it was written by Joshua Hamilton. So directly following the ending of our previous episode, Return to the Balmera, the space coffin had crash-landed on the Balmera, the dust had settled, and Voltron is standing near it.
Pidge says, oh no!
Okay, so we switch to the split screen, looking at all five pilots, and Hunk says, please tell me there's not a giant monster in there. Please tell me it's empty or full of space candy. One of those two. Either one is fine.
Lance says, I don't think it's a pinata, Hunk.
Keith says confidently, if it's the same kind of monster that attacked us on Eris, we already know how to beat it.
So Keith slams his Bayard into his control board, and Voltron forms its blade and shield. Red Lion holds the blade, and Green Lion the shield. Shiro says, hold your ground! The pod crashes open. A large robeast emerges, mostly dark red in color, with long, flat tentacle arms, with many round openings across the underside of the arms, and a chameleon-type face, with sharp, protruding bottom teeth, and green glowing eyes that roll around a 360-degree track around the head.
Can I just say that robeast looks terrifying?
Yeah.
Just terrifyingly saying. Cool.
Oh, yeah.
I just can't help but thinking about, like, the Christmas story. You're going to put somebody's eye out with that thing. But it's got plenty of eyes to put out.
The robeast scans Voltron and starts to charge a weapon on its chest that is a lot like Iron Man's glowing chest. The weapon fires a green bolt of energy at Voltron, which Voltron blocks with the shield and pushes Voltron backwards on the Balmera surface. Hunk, who's grunting and his voice is raised as the energy bolt continues to push Voltron back, says, it's not candy!
Lance replies, and it's not the same monster!
Voltron moves to the left to push himself away from the path of the energy bolt and raises himself into the air, heading towards the robeast. Shiro says, we need to draw its fire away from the Balmera's surface. The robeast fires another shot, and Voltron dodges to the right, still hovering. The robeast rises higher than Voltron and blasts two bolts out at the same time in a V-shape from its chest. This hits Voltron in the shield even harder, and all the paladins groan loudly as this impact affects them all. You see them in a split screen with their eyes closed and their faces grimacing intensely. The robeast moves to the left, still hovering, and fires another shot of the single green beam, but Voltron dodges and it misses. Voltron is flying to the left to escape the beam that continues to fire from the robeast. Voltron gets close to the robeast, stands on the surface, and swings the blade at the robeast, but misses as the robeast ducks and swerves like a boxer. As Voltron's back is turned after the follow-through of the swing, the right eye of the robeast sends out another green energy beam. This barely misses Voltron, and as Voltron rolls out and flies away, the Robeast beam fires again, and Voltron turns around and puts up the shield at the last second to take the blow. And as we see a close-up of Voltron's face covered in green light, Lance's split screen appears in the bottom left.
We can't hold out!
Then Pidge's split screen appears in the top right. Lance is still there.
Pidge says, "My lion's weakening. If the shield sustains structural damage, we're done for."
Keith's split screen appears on the far left. Both Lance and Pidge are still there.
Keith says, "Pidge is right."
Lance says, "Oh, Pidge is right. I'm the one that said we can't hold out."
"Lance, watch your footing," says Keith.
Black Lion backs into a pile of rocks that causes Voltron to lose balance. The beam blows the shield apart, and Voltron crashes on his back and drops the blade. They all groan loudly when they hit the ground, as we see the split screen of all five. Shiro says, "Okay, Team Voltron, disband. Everyone, evasive maneuvers. It can't shoot us all at once." As the lions are all flying in different directions around the Robeast opens out the long, flat tentacle arms, and every opening on the arms sends out green beams of energy at the same time, so the lions are getting fired upon wherever they go. Shiro says, "Okay, it can do that too." As the Robeast continues to fire everywhere, the castle ship appears out of nowhere with its particle barrier on and fires at the Robeast, stopping it temporarily. It fires back at the castle ship with its eye. Allura and Karan groan from the impact. An alarm starts blaring.
Allura says, "Where does Zarkon get these beasts from? How do they keep finding us?"
Karan replies, "Princess, the particle barrier won't sustain much longer. It's still not at full strength after the blast from the Galra ship."
In Shiro's cockpit, Shiro says, "Keith, try to draw its fire. I'm coming in from above."
Keith says, "Roger."
Keith flies in and fires on the Robeast, but Red Lion's blast has no effect on the Robeast. The Robeast sends a barrage of blasts from the arms toward Keith, and Shiro comes in from above in Black Lion. All of a sudden, just before he fires, the Robeast's eye spins around and fires on him. Shiro makes a strong pull on Black Lion's controls to roll out and avoid the blast. As they are still getting fired upon by the Robeast,
Lance says, "We need to find its blind spot."
Pidge says, "I don't think this thing has a blind spot. It has 1,000 eyes.
Hunk says, "Laser eyes! Laser eyes!" He screams. A section of the Balmera sticking out from the ground gets blasted by the Robeast and falls down.
Pidge says, "What do we do? Fighting this thing is like fighting an entire fleet at once." Keith says, "I think we've got to aim for those laser eyes and take them out."
Allura chimes in, "We'll cover you from up here."
The castle ship sends several bolts at the Robeast, which knocks it around a little. The Robeast turns around and focuses all of its beams on the castle ship. Alarms are beeping wildly.
Karan says, "We've lost the spectral generator!" Karan disappears quickly and reappears on the other side of the console. This continues as he screams the next several statements. "Going to reserve! There's a fire in Bin Bay 3! Suppressors on! Suppressors out! Princess, the ship is being torn apart!"
Very Scotty-ish.
Nice, thank you.
"Taking heavy fire up here. We're in trouble."
Shiro says, "Princess, pull back. Get out of its range now." Now appearing in the left corner of Shiro's cockpit,
"We'll not abandon you."
Shiro says, "You're not abandoning us. We're about to pull back anyway." Now appearing in the bottom right of Shiro's cockpit, Hunk says, "We are?" Shiro says, "We can't hold out. We have to." So we see a side view from Shiro's cockpit where we see Green Lion flying alongside Black Lion. Shiro says, "Lions, to the mine shafts. It's the only place the monster can't get us."
Pidge says, "Roger that."
Allura says, "Heading into orbit."
The lions head into the bottom of the mine shaft that Shay and Rax and the other Balmerans are in. The pilots get out of their lions and head over to the Balmerans.
Rex asks, "What is happening?" No, he would say, "What is happening?" He's very deliberate. Keith says, "There's a monster up there that Zarkon sent to destroy us."
She says, "A monster? Will Zarkon's savagery never abate? Perhaps our people were never meant to be free.
As she says this, her father holds her for comfort. Hunk says, Shay, don't give up. Zarkon's power grows with every planet he conquers, but he's weakened by every being that fights back.
Fight back against a monster like that? How?
I don't know, but we can beat it. Tell her, Keith.
Keith says, can we?
Shiro says, yes, we can. This is our first mission, and we're not going to fail. We can beat it. We just need some time to come up with a plan. Hunk says, see? Told you we can. Thanks, Shiro. All gasp as the Balmera is shaking all over. They hear the Balmera moaning. Hunk says, did you guys feel that over there?
Lance says, yeah, we feel it.
Pidge says, it's that sound again. What is that?
More Balmera moaning.
Brains.
The ground starts cracking under them. The older female Balmeran puts her hand on the ground.
That noise comes from the Balmera itself. Our home crumbles beneath our feet. The Balmera is dying, says Rax.
Shiro says over the comm, Karan, Alora, are you there?
Shiro, we're here.
Shiro, again over the comm. The Balmera.
We already know. Our scanners are showing the life energy draining from the Balmera.
Pidge opens up her hologram to see the same thing Karan is looking at.
Pidge says, how does that happen?
Karan says over the comm, removing crystals from a Balmera is like removing a vital part of the mighty beast. The Balmera needs time to regenerate itself to stay healthy, but the Gaur's greed may have cost this noble Balmera its life.
Hunk says, so what's going to happen?
Karan over the comm, its core will collapse, destabilizing the entire skeletal structure. Anything or anyone remaining on the Balmera at that point will be crushed into dust.
Shiro says, how long before its core collapses?
Karan over the comm, probably a matter of hours. The mighty organism willingly gives itself to all, but not all return its kindness.
On the castle ship, Alora talks, and as the others talk, video of them displays on their screens.
Alora says, our time is short. Evacuate the planet. We need to get all the Balmerans to the castle of Lions before the planet explodes.
Hunk says over the comm, okay, that sounds like a good plan, but how on earth do you plan on landing the castle with that monster thingy on the surface?
Pidge says over the comm, you'll need a distraction.
Shiro says over the comm, we'll engage the beast in our alliance. With the distracted, Alora and Karan will land the castle and load all of its citizens.
Lance says over the comm, or we could load Balmeras into our alliance a few at a time and shuttle them to the ship. You know, no engaging ferocious laser eye guy. How long would that take? Karan replies, days? Weeks?
Keith says, we only have hours.
So back on the Balmera, Shiro says, look, we don't need to beat this thing. We just need to bait it away from the ship, provoke and evade. Hunk says, okay, here's the thing. I'm worried that we're going to be really, really good at the provoking part and then, like, really bad at the evading part. But if this is what it takes to save Shay and everyone on the planet, then I'm in.
Keith says, can you contact the other Balmerans?
Shay says, I can, but I know not what they'll say. Leave the planet? Our home? Alora, over the comm, it's the only option. I'm coming down.
Karan says, Princess, no, it's too dangerous.
Alora says, someone has to be there to lead the people out.
Pidge says, you're coming down? That thing will spot your pod and blow it to pieces.
Alora says, let me worry about that. Just focus on keeping the creature distracted.
The lions fly out of the mining hole, and the rope beast is just sitting there motionless. They bombard it with a few quick hit-and-run shots, which really wakes it up because it immediately fires back. The lions are flying fast and dodging everything thrown at them. Hunk says, okay, we've provoked. Time to evade. The Robeast roars as he flies faster on their tails. Alora is getting in her pod on the castle ship. Shiro says over the comm, Princess, we've lured the monster away. It's time.
Alora says, I'll contact you when it's time I'm on the ground.
Karan over the loudspeakers. Be careful out there.
Alora shoots out of the castle ship. Her pod is like the front half of a motorcycle. But there's no seat or wheels. Her body flies free behind the handlebars. She must be strong to hold at those speeds. As she nears the surface, the one eye of the rope beast looks in her direction, and the line pilots see this.
Lance says, "Is that Allura?"
Hunk says, "We've got to protect the princess." Hunk sacrifices yellow line to keep Allura from getting any attention. He groans hard when he gets hit. Red and blue lions use their heat and cool powers to distract the rope beast. Allura makes it into the mining hole without being touched.
Allura says, "I'm on the ground."
Shiro says, "Hurry. I don't know how long we can hold this thing off."
Allura says, "Shay, I'm going to need your help." Shay says, "Princess?" Allura says, "Have you contacted the other Balmerans? What is it? What's going on?" Shay says, "All Balmerans give you thanks for the kindness you have and the paladins bestowed upon us. But alas, we cannot take leave of our home." Allura says, "What?" Shay says, "If our great Balmeran's life cycle is over because of us, our desire to stay is with it until the end." Allura says, "But he'll never survive."
Rax says, "We contacted the others and all agree. It's not right that you risk your lives for us. Please, away. We ask for no more guilt and shame upon us."
"It is our wish. The wish of all Balmerans." Allura says steadfastly, "No. I won't give up on you. I won't give up on any of you, no matter what the circumstances." But Shay says, "But we do not ask this of you, princess. Please." Allura says, "I have heard your words. Let me speak mine. I want to talk to Balmerans. Can you get a message to them for me?"
As she says this, her hand, which was leaning on the wall, glows blue underneath.
As she says this, the Balmeran speaks. "There is no need to speak for you. You have a unique power within. The Balmeran will carry your words."
Allura gasps and pulls her hand away. The Balmeran grandmother slowly leads her hand back to the wall.
"Speak your heart, child. All can hear you." Allura says, "Balmerans, this is Princess Allura. You don't know me, but I am here to help. I know what it's like to watch your home planet die, for I come from the planet Altea, a planet that has long been destroyed by the Galra. But I refuse to give up. And now you have the same choice. You can decide now to devote your lives to making sure this never happens to another planet. I am eternally sorry for what has happened to the Balmera, but I beg you, do not let this dying be in vain. Honor the Balmera's death by refusing to give up. Join me in my fight against the Galra."
As she says these words, they show different locations around the Balmera where the Balmerans are hearing her words and listening intently. The grandmother puts her hand against the wall, and it too glows blue.
"Your words have touched our hearts." Allura says, "Thank you." The grandmother says, "No, thank you. You've given us a reason to hope again." Allura says, "Everyone, head to the cave just under the surface."
Karan is looking at his screen, which shows dots moving down corridors on a map.
"Princess, your speech must have worked. The Balmerans are moving toward the surface."
Allura and the Balmerans are running to reach the others, all panting.
"Karan, we're just above the surface. Triangulate my position. This is your landing zone."
All groan as the Balmera continues to crumble and quake.
Karan says, "Yes, Allura, readying ship. Castle of Lions coming in. Paladins, how are you holding up?"
The rope beast is still sending steady streams at all of the lions.
Keith says, "I think we've got him pretty distracted. Are the Balmerans in position?"
Allura says, "Making their way to the top."
Balmerans are panting as they make their way up toward the ship, and they gasp at the size of the castle ship. The castle ship lands, and the doors open.
Karan says, "Bring them out! Hurry now!"
There's a bunch of rumbling. The Balmera is moaning. Balmerans are screaming as the ground breaks apart.
Allura screams, "No!"
The Balmerans are screaming.
Karan says, "It's on the verge of collapsing! We have to go!"
"But the Balmerans!"
Rax says, They're trapped. What can be done? Time is short.
More rumbling. The lions are getting fired upon, but the ones that miss are hitting the Balmera. Hunk says, every hit weakens the Balmera. Have you evacuated yet? What's happening?
Karan says, the Balmerans are trapped. Just keep distracting that beast.
Hunk says, do you want us to distract it by dying? Because that's what's going to happen. Shiro says, guys, remember when I said we didn't have to beat it? Hunk says, yes, I remember that. Shiro says, well, we might have to beat it. At the mining hole, the quakes have made it impossible for the ones in the pit to make it to the surface.
Shay says, we're lost. All are trapped with no chance for escape. Allura says, we can't give up. But Shay says, what can be done? The ground below the castle ship starts to glow blue with rising sparkles. The Balmera! The ground beneath your mighty ship appears healed. Its essence thrives, but how? Allura says, the castle. The grandmother says, not just the castle, but you as well.
Karan adds, it's true, your Altaian energy combined with the ship's crystal has revitalized this part of the Balmera.
That's it. Maybe we can perform a ceremony you spoke about. We can set the Balmera.
Rax adds, what ceremony?
As Karan tells the story, we see the ritual as it happened thousands of years ago. Several Balmerans kneel around the crystal with their hands on the ground, while an Altaian stands and puts both hands on the crystal, which is three times bigger than the Altaian.
Karan says, in the days of old, when Altaians were given the gift of crystals from a Balmera, we would repay its sacrifice by performing a ceremony. A sacred Altaian would reinfuse a Balmera with quintessence. In this way, we had a symbiotic relationship.
Allura says, the Galra have only been taking. It's time we give back. I can connect with the crystal in the bridge and use the crystal, the castle's power, as an amplifier.
As she says this, they move under the ship.
Karan says, when your father performed the ceremony, it was on a much smaller scale. I beg you, to heal an entire planet, it could take more energy than you possess. You may not live through it.
Allura says, I know you are scared for me, Karan, but I must try.
We see Allura standing in the center of the ground below the castle ship, while the Balmerans surround her, kneeling and placing their hands on the ground. Down in the mining hall, all the Balmerans are touching the walls and the ground to connect with the Balmera. Everywhere the Balmera is touched glows blue. Allura raises her arms up on each side, and a blue glowing streak comes down from the crystal on the castle ship to the blue circle on the ground. Karan gasps at this sight. Meanwhile, the lions are still dealing with the Robies, trying to keep it away from the ceremony, and trying to keep it from hitting the Balmera with its energy bolts.
Keith says, guys, this isn't working. We'll never take this beast down in our lions. Pidge replies, well, forming Voltron didn't work either.
Lance says, not without some way to shoot all those laser eyes at once.
Hunk sees his console begin to move and the Bayard lights up. Hunk says, that's weird. What are you trying to tell me? Guys, something's happening here. I think there's a way to take down all those laser eyes at once.
Pidge says, well, what is it?
Hunk says, do you remember how Voltron formed that sword with Keith's Bayard? I think my lion's telling me I can do the same thing with my Bayard.
Keith asks, are you sure?
Hunk says, let's find out. Form thingy! Nothing happens. It didn't work. Shiro says, because we didn't form Voltron yet. Hunk says, oh, right. Yeah, I know.
Pidge says, guys, whatever we're planning, let's hurry up and do it.
The Robeast growls. Shiro says, we've got to defend the castle. Everyone, follow me. Form Voltron. And then you see the transformation sequence. The Robeast starts to form a center ball of energy from all the openings in its arms, aimed at the castle ship. But Voltron fires on it, stopping it, and lands from above between the Robeast and the castle ship. Voltron forms Hunk's shoulder gun. As the Robeast gears up for another same center ball of energy, it fires on Voltron, and Voltron fires back with a shoulder gun matching the blast in the middle. Hunk is grunting. Keith and Pidge are grunting. Lance is grunting. The Robie's blast pushes back on the shoulder gun blast. Shiro says, "It's not enough." Hunk says, "We'll have to try something else." Hunk pulls back on the shoulder gun slightly, and the Robie's blast gets deflected slightly to the right, barely missing the Cashel ship. Karan groans as the debris from the near miss falls all around him. The Robie's pulls back its arms and fires all its guns at Voltron. Voltron flies away and comes back around. Yellow Lion starts beeping and displaying a grid which targets all the openings on the arms of the Robeast. Hunk says, "Are you guys seeing this?"
Keith says, "Roger that."
Shiro says, "Let's see what this thing can do. Engage." The shoulder gun sends out a slew of shots, all swirling in different directions and hitting the Robeast hard all over. The Robeast seems to be down, as a purple streak of color blinks all over it, like it's shorted out. Then we see Alora raise her hands up and slam them down on the Balmera's surface, and the circle of blue stretches out across the whole planet. Shiro says, "Guys, look!" The Robie snarls and gets up, then starts firing at Voltron again. Voltron flies around to avoid the blast. Keith grunts and slams his fist at the Robeast, knocking it on its back, seemingly for good. The Robeast is powering down. Alora sighs, groans, and falls down on her side.
She says, "Princess, are you all right?" Alora says, "Did it work?"
Rax checks by touching the ground. "Yes, the Balmera lives. It thanks you."
But the paladins who come running up outside of their lines then hear the Robies start to stir again, and they all gasp.
"No!"
The Robeast is snarling as it powers up another blast, but the Balmera crystals grow out of the ground and encase the Robeast in a crystal tomb. Hunk says, "No way!"
Karan says, "The Balmera just saved us!"
Alora says, "Look at the crystals!"
The crystals are growing out of the ground all over the planet. Hunk says, "Oh, who's a good Balmera? You are. Who ate the big monster? You did. Yes, you did. Yes, you did."
Keith says, "Dude, what are you doing?"
Hunk says, "What? It's alive. And it loves my scratches." Keith just holds his hand to his head in disbelief at Hunk's behavior. A little later on, as the sky is dark near Yellow Lion, on a cliff overlooking a large valley, Shay and Hunk are sitting next to each other on top of Yellow Lion's head.
Shay says, "Thank you for honoring your vow to return."
Hunk says, "I should be thanking you. You made me understand what's most important." He looks up at the stars. Sarkhan and his Galra Empire are destroying lives. I'm part of a team that can change that. I know that now. A glow comes across them as the sun starts to rise on the horizon.
Shay says, "What is that?"
Hunk says, "It's the dawn of a new day." A beautiful sunrise appears across the valley.
Yay!
The end.
That was fun.
That's so cool.
That was so awesome. That was pretty neat. Thank you.
As we usually do in these episodes, we talk about the additional voices. In this one, obviously, we had Emily Iden playing Shay.
Mm-hmm.
In the actual episode, of course.
It was so cool when we had Emily Iden playing Shay on our podcast. I just have to let you know.
Oh, she's adorable.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, that was cool.
And then, of course, also in this episode, Scott Wolf played Rax. And Cree Summer played the Balmeran grandmother.
Yes, she did.
Lots of hats that woman wears.
Yes, she does. And she's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
She is.
Yep. So what do you all think of this episode?
Oh, man, this is cool. This is a good wrap-up. It's like those two episodes, the one before this one and this one, make the story. It's, you know, they just kind of had to find a place to split it, I think. A really clever thing to do is to have a way to save this Balmera. Because up until this point, you know, they've put so much stress on, oh, it's dying, or oh, it's in pain. Oh, and it's good to be able to come out the other side of that with something that happy, you know, even, mm-hmm.
you know, most of the time in sci-fi, that planet would have exploded and they would have taken the people away first. That's pretty cool.
I think it was important that we saw this new power that Allura has.
Yes, indeed. Very much.
Yeah.
She didn't even know she had it.
That did raise a question for me. He mentions her being a blessed Altean or a holy.
Sacred.
Sacred. Is she somehow more sacred than he is just because of being royal? Or...
Well, her father apparently was the one who did the ritual before she did.
So I guess that's what it is.
It's even mentioned her father was the one who did it before she did in a smaller scale. Right. So apparently, I don't know if that makes her sacred. If perhaps royalty and sacred Balmerans are the same thing, could be. Not quite sure. But apparently, she's very different to do this kind of ritual. Apparently, he can't do the ritual, but maybe perhaps royalty and perhaps a sacred priesthood could do it.
Yeah, maybe.
She may also have the way of pulling the good quintessence out of a living being.
But Karan has an awesome mustache, which more than makes up for it.
Well, you know, when him and Hunk go in the previous episode to go get the big crystal, Karan does stop to lay his hand on the crystal. So maybe that's something in a smaller scale. They can return some reverence. Thanks for the crystal, the reverence. Yeah. And maybe that has some of that effect, too. But I just thought it was interesting that they pointed out that she was different than he was in more than just that she's the princess. There's something bigger there.
Do you remember when Karan tried to lift the crystal all by himself and broke his back? I'm sorry, but
old age.
With the animation they did on the breaking of his back, there's no way he should have ever recovered from that.
Well, yeah, that's true. That would be a very devastating injury in real life.
Yes.
Yeah, that was not, that was not literal.
No. Figurative,
yeah.
I hope.
I felt like that when I picked up something.
So, do we really think that Shay and the Balmerans could come back?
I think so. You know, I do think that this was a turning point for Team Voltron in the sense that they turned a situation around very successfully as a team here, with Voltron holding off this monster while Allura saves the Balmera, who in turn saves them all. I think that Hunk in particular, having his spirits lifted and his sense of purpose renewed. This was a huge turning point, I think, for the team at large. In that sense, the Balmera has already served its purpose for now in the story. But will we see them again? I don't know.
It's good to see all the characters coming together like Voltron, even the ones that weren't a part of Voltron.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. And one important thing to see in this was that Voltron really didn't defeat the Robeast. The Balmera did.
Right. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's kind of first, isn't it?
Yeah, and also there was a completely no Zarkon and no Hagar in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just Hagar's influence.
Right.
Yeah, well, the Robeast, yeah.
Right.
That was a pretty strong Robeast.
I want to add a little something to this, as I am I was in college, an English minor. I have to mention that, you know, that we saw Hagar, we saw the, you know, Galra take life from a planet. Later on, episodes, we saw them take life, quintessence of it.
Yeah.
But here we see the Altaians giving their life to a planet, giving their lives for a purpose, which is very opposite of the Galra.
Right.
There are certain, is that opposite, a 180 tangent to what they are doing. They're giving their life. Allura didn't care that she might lose her life in this whole ritual process. Just want to do it. However, it comes to the opposite end of the Galra with, you know, Hagar. They're taking life. They're sucking it up into their own essence. It's a very different, very big contrast.
Right. Very big contrast, but a very similar skill set.
Absolutely.
You know, one who can take life could probably also give life. So yes. It's more about them being very similar in the fact that they can transfer this energy, but dissimilar in the way they're doing it. Yes, I agree.
Absolutely. A pivotal point in the whole, you know, of the dynamic of their graces, I thought, you know, in this episode.
I almost think of quintessence as sort of a stand-in for the natural world, you know, yeah. and yeah. you've got you know, you can think of the Galra as, you know, say, you know, the U.S. at the time of the Industrial Revolution, where it was, you know, exploit, exploit, exploit. And then the Altaians being the contrary to that, which is, you know, preserve the environment, protect what we have, restore it to what it might have been before. I really see that perhaps the Altaians and the Galra are maybe their powers. Yeah, well, right. Maybe their common history concerns their philosophical differences over what to do about quintessence or the natural universe itself.
Good point. It makes me think, too, you know, because at one point we know that they worked together because, you know, the Altaians worked on Voltron and Zarkon was the Black Paladin. So what were they fighting?
That's right.
Before that.
That's a great question.
Very good question, Drew.
So what you're suggesting is that if the Altaians and Galra were once allies and Zarkon fought along with the other paladins who were presumably Altaians. What was the common foe? Great question.
Yeah.
I put a lot of thought into that one.
You're nailing it. Really?
So, yeah, I want to see that, you know, if Lauren or Joaquim or happen to listen here, you know, let's I want to know who they fought before.
So we do want to let people know that we are going to be reviewing the next episode, episode 9, Crystal Venom, and we're going to be bringing in two other people in to do that episode review with us. So how did you guys feel about doing this by the script?
That was fun.
It was so much fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too.
Because that was something Greg and I didn't do before, you know, where we had everybody, every different person doing a different voice.
Or two.
Yeah, that was a hoot.
I think we might would have talked about the episode during the episode more if we weren't doing a script reading.
Right.
But I there were points where I wanted to step in and mention this or that.
Occasionally said things.
But it felt more like a scenario where we should kind of keep the flow going.
I'm okay with either way, you know, whether you wanted to do it, just keep going with the flow, or with whether you want to stop it in the middle and talk about something. So what were some of the things you wanted to talk about when you wanted to stop it?
You know, there was the point where Allura's on the motorcycle pod thing, you know, that's really cool. That was really well done.
Oh, yeah, wasn't it?
You know, just not anything like poignant, but little bits about this part being funny or that part being funny. When they're talking about, well, forming Voltron isn't working, or what we're doing now isn't working. When we formed Voltron, that didn't work. There's a lot of banter that's really well written in all these episodes.
It is. Very well written.
It does show that they have to think on their feet, and they have to, you know, realize that they don't have the most powerful weapon to defeat this thing. So what do they do when they don't?
You know, having in the military, I kind of appreciate that kind of my point, because they give us all this equipment in the military, this technology, and you're like, wait a minute, this isn't kind of working. Should I do something different? You know, I can definitely appreciate what they're coming from, where they're coming from with that. Definitely.
Well, there's a common trope out there in, you know, speculative fiction of the whole, we need to come up with a plan. Why? The plan never works anyway.
True.
So let's just wing it.
Okay, we just tried that. It didn't work. Let's try something else.
Exactly.
Okay, that didn't work. Now let's try something else.
It's a lot of trial and error.
Right.
Well, you know, interesting enough that Keith kind of pointed out, oh, hey, Robeast, let's get my sword out. Let's get the shield out. Let's beat it. You know, which is the episode was definitely that. He even said that. Oh, it's Robeast. Let's get my shield. Let's get the sword out. Get the shield out. We'll beat it. Like we did last
time. That's how it worked in the 80s.
Yeah.
Or last episode.
Yeah. Yeah, in virtually every episode, not every episode, but in a very sizable majority of episodes in the 80s, Voltron defeated Robeast, you know, quite handily with the Blazing Sword alone at the very end. And it's fun to me that this is only the second Robeast that these folks have fought, and the sword has already failed.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful.
And that's going to be it for the whole first season. That's two Robeasts in 13 episodes.
Which is great.
It is.
I mean, honestly,
I love it.
There's the whole episode with the ship and Pidge walking around. What's the name of that one? I know one of you guys knows it because y'all know this stuff better than I do. The castle falling.
Yep.
Right. You know, the lions don't even get touched for a whole episode.
Nope. You're right. Love it.
I'm very impressed by that. Absolutely. Just in general, because, you know, I know the show is Voltron, but there's more to Voltron than just the lions. And it's absolutely good that these creative people can see this.
Yes.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Totally with you.
Yep.
So it was great having you guys on. We're at the 2-hour point here. So I just wanted to thank you for joining us on Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast. It goes so quick, doesn't it?
It does.
Indeed, it does.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Greg.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Thank you both.
Indeed.
I'm sure our paths will cross again.
Yes. Yes. And you guys enjoy the better weather down there, please.
Absolutely. Well, we haven't had rain in a month, so
no, we have not.
Oh wow!
So mosquitoes down here,
and there's wildfires and other things happening.
Oh yes,
but you haven't been under freezing yet either, have you?
No, not even close.
Yeah, we've been under freezing conditions already.
What?
Yeah.
Oh no!
Yeah, when there's frost on the windshield. So enjoy yourselves down there.
Yeah, absolutely.
We will.
And thank you again for joining us. And we'll see you all next time on
Let's Voltron!